This is Drive Through Radio on AM 790. Call Paul and John Zangari now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. Drive Through Radio with Paul and John Zangari on your station for talking business, AM 790.
Good morning. Welcome to Drive Through Radio, car care for you right here on AM 790. I'm Paul Zangari, along with my little brother, John.
How you doing, Paul?
Not too bad. And Brett Ferruccio's here to make sure you can hear us. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning. That's a little more difficult than usual today.
Yeah, well, it's a longer stint.
That's true. You get extra airtime.
Yeah.
You get a whole extra newscast worth of time.
Yeah, the news guys are taking the morning off here, so that gives us an 8 o'clock start instead of 8:06. So 6 more minutes of car care. Now, look, if you have any kind of an automotive question or comment and you want to get it done this year, this is the time to call. The numbers are 437-5000, or if that's a toll call for you, you can call us at 888-345-0790. And my guess is that works for most of North America, not just the USA, considering our experience calling the station from Canada once.
Yeah, but that was with a dial-up phone. Come on.
I know. But so, with a toll-free number, yeah.
Yeah, so my point with that is, that was a while ago. Things change.
Yes, now you use voice over IP and everything's free. But anyway...
No, you still have to pay for the internet.
Well, yes, and if you had done it the way we did it, of course, Norman and Giselle were paying for their everyday phone service when we were calling from Quebec. So, it's the same thing all over again. Just, I guess you could say, old wine and new bottles.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Old wine and new bottles.
Merry day after.
Just not a label?
No, not a label. No. No,
they're bottle,
so generic. No, it's generic these days.
Yeah.
Anyway, merry day after to you.
Felt
a little bit more like Easter in terms of temperature yesterday.
I remember, I don't know, 45 years ago about.
Yeah.
We had an Easter
that snowed.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that. But Easter, also the resurrection. I started up the Corvair again because I needed to move it. That was different. But anyway, I want to let you know a little gift from Cumulus now. You can actually catch podcasts of Drive Through Radio.
So you don't have to listen to us now.
No, although we recommend it, especially if you want to call us. Although, we did get a call one time from Elkhart, Indiana, and this was back before the internet.
Really?
Yeah, this was a fellow who had been a listener here, who had moved. He had a car care problem, and he said, well, wait a minute.
If
I'm not mistaken, they're on at 8 a.m., which we were at the time. We've moved around. We're back at 8. And I'm gonna call the boys back in Providence. And he used the toll-free number from Elkhart, and he got through, and... Yeah, we were able to help him out with his car problem. So,
that was.
But that was before the internet, so he just took a wild stab and it worked.
Yeah, I guess what the heck.
Yeah. So anyway, again, 437-5000, 888-345-0790. If you're listening live, if you happen to be catching the podcast right now, and you have a question,
call all you want. We're not answering.
That's right. unless you try again next Saturday morning. Now to catch the podcast. The number, website, www, of course, although you don't usually have to put that in, 790business.com. And then along the button bar on the top, you see podcasts. Click that, and I guess it's alphabetical by the...
Date, alphabetical.
No, by the last name of the hosts, because we're the last podcast listed.
Oh.
All right, but it's there, bottom right.
And it says Drive Through Radio.
Yeah, it does. It says Drive Through Radio. And when you go to Audio Boom, which is the site that's hosting our podcasts, and click on Drive Through Radio, you can either click on the most recent show or click on Drive Through Radio. And we have shows going back into November, at least. And Brett, thanks for uploading some of those shows that were already in the can. And that means, by the way, if you're wondering about the history of the automobile. We've got that show that we did with G. Wayne Miller, writing about the early days of the auto industry. Also the show we did with Joe Paleo, talking about restoring cars that are over 100 years old. So, there's that, as well as the car care and road tests and all of the other stuff that we regularly do.
I don't know. That always, I don't know why it does, I guess, but it always freaks me out a little bit when you say something like cars over 100 years old, and I don't hear the numbers 18 at the beginning of the year. year.
Well, stop and think about this, John. So I moved the 64 Corvair yesterday, right? Now, when we were kids, the first old car that we had was the 34 Chevy,
correct,
which Pop bought before either of us was quite old enough to drive. That car was 31 years old.
Yep.
Now, the Corvair, which was a car that was being made at around that time, is over 50 years old. And my car is, what, 51 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, time passes. You know, there's a reason our hair is gray.
That reminds me of an interesting thought process I had when a kid was in an electrical shop asked me about some stuff on his 55 Oldsmobile.
Uh-huh.
And, you
cool.
know, in my head, I'm going, gee, well, that car's not all that old.
Because Pop had a 54, yeah, right.
I had to stop and think about it and do the math. And I said, geez, this kid's in high school and he's got a car that is a 55. And when I was in college, I had a car that was a 26.
Yeah, I know.
His car is older
than the 26 Chrysler was
when I had it. I said, I guess to get those cars are now old cars.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was thinking if you go back and put it in perspective, the first car ever, because Rhode Island had only started issuing that kind of plate, that had the plate that's on my Oldsmobile now was on that 54 Olds that Pop owned, and that would have been right around 60, 61, because I think he got the plate in 61.
Okay.
Yeah. So, which is, I believe, when the state
what
first...
What plate was it?
The LZ. Because Rhode Island didn't put Zs in combinations until 60, around then.
I think it was later than 61 because SL came first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, no, that was 58. That was on the Beetle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it was 61. But 61 was also the year where we changed to the plates that didn't take the metal tabs for the validation. Yeah. Yeah, of course. They were sort of fake proof in one way. Now, what Rhode Island used to do, for those of you who aren't as old as us and therefore don't remember this firsthand, was Rhode Island...
Or who don't collect Rhode Island license plates.
Or don't
plates.
Collect Rhode Island license plates, yes. The license plate it was issued for 2 years. And it was funny because Rhode Island would validate late. In other words, in 1957, all right, and I'm not sure if they came out in the odd years or the even years, but let's say the new plate came out in the odd year, all right?
Yeah.
In 57, if the previous year's plate was white on black, the previous 2 years' plate was white on black, you would get a black on white, and it would say 57 on it, and you'd have to have it in use by, I believe it was the end of March. There was a lag. You know, the beginning of the year, I always figured, what if we're traveling someplace, because we did travel quite a bit, into...
How about coming back from Miami in January?
Yeah,
or
yeah there you go,
like,
exactly.
You know, early January.
Yeah, and it would have looked like we were driving on expired plates. But I guess with whatever preceded the Internet, well, police departments had teletypes. You know, they
Not
would
in
know.
Car.
No, departments had teletypes. And they would know when the validations changed, I guess. Back at the headquarters, they'd be informed. Because we never did get pulled over coming back from Miami in January.
That's because we were driving an old Beetle that
couldn't go that fast.
Yeah, overloaded old Beetle.
25
Remember
or 36
thing
horsepower.
Remember roof, that box that was almost as big?
Oh, you mean the wind resistance generator.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So anyway, you'd get the, let's say, the black on white plate, and it said 57 on it. And there were a couple of little slots, one on either side of the 57. Then sometime in the beginning of 1958.
March.
Well, no. probably during February so that you had it on by March. You would get this little plate that had tabs on it, and you pushed the tabs through the slots and bent them on the back, and that tab, of course, said 58 on it.
Yep.
And that's how you validated your plate for that year. So 61 was the year that we started using the stick-on reflectorized year validation.
Yeah.
So I might be getting that mixed up with the year that we got the Z, the LZ. But it's funny because Pop had a plate in... I guess the 40s, because I'd seen it on pictures of some of his cars, that was Z followed by four numbers.
Yeah.
And sometime around the late 40s, early 50s, the state called them all back. They didn't, for some reason, we can't issue plates with one letter and four numbers. One letter and three numbers, okay.
Yeah, yeah, they were smaller letters.
Yeah, maybe.
They were when you had two letters. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So they fit for no good reason.
Yeah, so I can't understand why they pulled in the letter and four numbers. I don't know. I do know that when I was registering the 39 Olds as an everyday car at some point in the 1980s, I went to the registry and I was just asking around, stuck my head in offices. I said, you know, is it possible to get the plate with just one initial and three numbers like they had back in the 30s? Because it went back quite a ways where you could have one letter and up to four and then up to three numbers.
Yeah.
And I remember the woman saying, geez, I'd like to help you, but the only initials I could get would be a Q or a Z.
So,
okay, I'll take a Z.
I'll take that, yeah.
Yeah, still have it. Yep. Still have that plate.
But I never could figure out the reason why you would have two letters that are smaller and three or one, two, or three numbers, or a large letter and three numbers, because there was a space in there big enough for another letter.
Yeah, you know, the only reason I can think of that would justify having slightly different sizes for the letters versus the numbers is to avoid the kind of confusion that you have for a lot of people when they go to type something in on their computer. So you can tell ones from zero, ones from I's and zeros from O's.
Well, ones from I's, there should be no problem on a computer because they control the fonts.
Yeah.
And same thing with O's and zeros, there should be no problem at all.
But someone write down the address and they write it by hand.
Yeah, but when somebody does it by hand, that's when there's a problem.
Exactly.
Because most people don't know the difference between a zero and an O.
Yeah, and there is no I or O in vehicle identification numbers.
For a good reason.
Yeah, for a very good reason. But now, some people put a slash through that circle that they draw and some people say, and the funny thing is, they'll say, that's how I can tell it's a zero.
I said, why doesn't it looks like a Q to me?
Yeah, well, there's an additional problem with that, and that's my buddy in Denmark, Jan, whose name is spelled Jorgen, right? J-O-R-G-E-N.
Jorgen with a zero.
Well, the O has a slash in it.
Yeah, I know. That's
yeah, so
I'm
that's
saying.
An
it's
O,
a zero.
It's not a zero.
I know. The people who do that are making things a little bit more complicated. Yeah. If they can go through the trouble of putting a line through it, make it an egg.
Huh?
A zero is an egg.
More egg, as opposed to a circle.
An O is a circle.
In many fonts, you can even see the difference.
In most fonts, you can. In most, you can.
There are some where you can't.
Yeah,
but,
I know, which is not. But the computer does know the difference.
The computer can
even
tell.
Even though
because,
you can't tell by looking.
Because it knows which key generated it.
Yeah.
It can tell by, I don't know, how the electrons feel.
Because
the ones and zeros.
If you can't tell by looking, right, and you just change the font, it changes its shape.
You know what's really funny? As I started to say that, I realized how the computer can tell because of ones and zeros. Not I's and O's, it's ones and zeros. Because when you think about it, I'm sure most people, although they probably don't know how to, you know, program computers and all the stuff that goes on behind the binary electronics, it actually looks for a signal that's on or off any number of times. I think it's, what, eight in a sequence?
Something
whatever
like
it
that,
is.
Yeah.
We don't really need to know that. But what it is looking for is an on or an off signal. And that's all that it works with, and the on is a 1 and the off is a 0.
And that's why most electronics today on the on, off, or the power button has a line and a circle.
Yes. And, in fact, we see on a lot of cars now, bringing it back into specifically what we're doing here, we see on a lot of cars, for example, the audio and the HVAC, if they have an on-off button, as opposed to, say, turning the fan on all the way, or in a lot of cases, turning the volume switch all the way down past a click, where you will see a circle that at the top is intersected by a line.
Yep.
So that's a 1 and a 0, and it's telling you that this is the on-off switch.
Yeah, it's not a stylized 10.
Yeah, that would be difficult for, let's say, tuning in.
It would, wouldn't it? But it's volume, you know? And turn it up to 10, but if you want it real loud, you go to 11.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Noticing at the clock, it's about 14 after 8, and I think it's a good time to take a break and remind you of the phone numbers, 437-5000, 888-345-0790. John, test drive, what are we looking at today?
We're looking at a Mitsubishi, or Mitsubishi, depending on how you say it.
Or
say
how you mispronounce it. Or
talk to any three people, you get three different
pronunciations. Yes.
Outlandish sports car. I mean, Outlander sport SUV. Now, They are still making cars.
How about that? We'll find out live and in living color later on here on Drive Thru Radio on AM 790.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know. Everything
oh, thank you, Ethel. All right. Appealing. And thank you, Brett, for finding Ethel. Great job.
Dug it right up.
It's it's amazing what you can find. Anyway, but you got to work.
Hiding on the internet.
She's hiding it. No, anyway. Anyway, welcome back to Drive Through Radio. We talk about cars here, and sometimes cars are in the movies. And by the way, why do these guys talk about cars on the radio? What gives them the, you know, whatever, the chutzpah? I can say chutzpah today the way my throat is.
Should have saved that for Hanukkah.
Yeah, well, or should have used it a while back, yes. But at any rate, claim they know anything about cars. Well, okay, a little bit of background. These days, I'm actually a sales consultant at the Tasca Automotive Group in Cranston. I have also repaired cars for a living. That goes back a little ways, restored mostly. And I do write about automotive technical subjects for professional technicians to read about. John, meanwhile, taught professional automotive technicians for quite some time and taught automotive technology to young minds for many, many a year, and has been a certified automotive technician about as long as there has been such a thing. So, yeah, we do kind of have the props to talk about cars. Anyway, getting back to show business. One thing you mentioned earlier, John.
We're in show business.
Yeah, I know, but the one that Ethel Merman was singing about, that aspect of show business.
Oh, okay.
You were talking a little bit earlier about the fact that you're going to be reviewing a Mitsubishi, and surprise, they're still in business because, of course, they haven't been making a lot of noise or getting a lot of pixels, I guess you could say.
Yeah, they don't advertise that much.
Exactly. And one car that I really, really like, and in fact one of our family cars, is a Ford Flex, and that thing's never getting publicity. It seems as if it never gets advertised.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a stupid question.
Yes.
Do they still make it?
Yes, the 16s are in production.
See, that's the problem.
Production began, I think, 2 weeks ago for the 16 models.
Yeah, and
an awful lot of people go, what's a Flex? Now, the funny thing is, and what makes me tie it into show business, is if Ford's not going to publicize the car, maybe Hollywood will. I happen to see an ad for one of those motion pictures that opens on Christmas, right? And it's the one that Will Ferrell is in. And I will be able to tell you which it is.
Will Ferrell with Mark?
I'm not sure.
Wahlberg?
Daddy's Home?
Yeah, Daddy's
Home. And in the clip that's on TV, and as you know, they only show the best clips in the commercials.
Absolutely.
Yes.
If you don't like the clips, don't go to the movie.
There's a Flex. Now, the funny thing is, there's a website that I really, really enjoy. And if you don't know about
that
this one,
he spends too much time on it.
No, actually, it's been helpful for research in any number of ways. But if you've never heard of this one, you might find it interesting, too. And sometimes, especially if you see something, you see a vehicle and you go, what the heck was that? You might be able to look it up. It's imcdb.org, International Movie Cars Database. Some of our work is in it, going back to the 1970s.
Yes,
we can talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. But at any rate, so I went there and I just looked up. They have search utility that can work any number of ways. You can put in, you're not really sure what you're looking for. For example, you might say that you're looking for a
big yellow gaudy car.
No, but let's say it was a Buick built somewhere between 1946 and 1950. You can search that way, or you can be very, very specific. I just put in Ford Flex. I didn't put in the year because...
Yeah, not that long of a run.
Well, not only that, but 09 through 12 look almost identical to each other, and then 13 through 16 look virtually identical to
each
other.
They changed the style enough so you can tell?
Yeah, from the front. The grill is different. So
do they have that, like, Ford family face to it now?
It's different. It doesn't... In 09, what was contemporary for Ford's was the three-bar grill with the oval in the middle, and that's what the 09 through 12 looked like. Mm-hmm. And then with the 13s, they went to a single bar with no oval on the front, just on the back, and Flex written on the hood.
I was hoping for the Aston Martin look.
No, no. It would be kind of tough to make a box look like an Aston Martin. Yeah. Although, crazy, I think Aston Martin, remember the Scion... IQ, the one that had
the box
with the seats arranged kind of funny.
Yeah.
I think Aston Martin sold a version of that. I'm going to have to look that one up.
Really?
Yeah. But at any rate, not what you think of when you think of Aston Martin.
No.
I'll have to look that one up.
Thought of very expensive, really sharp-looking cars.
Well, yeah. And then,
an IQ that was very expensive.
Yeah. It's kind of like their AMC. What was the egg? That AMC made.
You mean the Pacer?
Yeah, kind of like their AMC Pacer. Except that wasn't completely out of character for AMC.
No, it wasn't. It was just typical. We're going to do something that's really awkward.
Yeah. Well, now, one thing that's interesting, on IMCDB, they have a star system that tells you at a glance whether the car was just sort of a background vehicle, had a minor role, was used by a major character, or was one of the major cars
TV movies too?
There's movies and TV.
39 Oldsmobile?
I got to look for that one. You know, that's a good point. I'm going to check that one probably during a break. But at any rate, the second one showing. The first one, Real Husbands of Hollywood, there's one star for the Flex that someone found in there. And, you know, members, and all you got to do is sign up. You can put in something that you found. I found a Chrysler like mine in 31. In the Untouchables.
Okay. Well, they got a good shot.
They had a good shot. Yeah. And actually, it was a major car. Elliot Ness was getting around in it.
Oh, you think he killed
Robert Stack, you know, the real Elliot Ness.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, I uploaded that one myself. But the Flex in Real Husbands of Hollywood, you can see it's a background vehicle. It gets one star. But it does prove a point if they actually shot that on the streets in Hollywood. The Flex is a huge hit in Southern California. That's what keeps it in production.
Really?
Yeah.
You know why? They must all think the surfer thing. It should have a surfboard sticking out of it.
It looks like kind of a mini Countryman on steroids.
Mini Countryman.
Mini
Cooper.
Mini Cooper Countryman.
Okay, that kind of mini.
Yeah, or, and frankly, a Range Rover to some extent. One of the Range Rover models.
I don't think it looks like something from the 20s, but not.
Nah. More, you could see Warden June getting around.
You know,
in
it's kind of like, to me, what you see in the modern Mustangs. You see the 68, 69 Mustang.
Yeah.
You know, in it is so much. Mm-hmm. And the kind of thing that, and by the way, that makes it look good. You know, mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes the box. You see that woody wagon that should have surfboards sticking out of it,
mm-hmm.
which makes the Flex look good,
because
it is a box.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's one of the things I like about it. It's one of the few vehicles out there that doesn't pretend to not be a station wagon.
It's a box station wagon on a Ford Ford 500.
No, it was actually on the Taurus X platform.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And which is very similar to the Explorer now. But the way you put it in modern terms is a stretched Explorer with a boxy body.
Lowered.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, it's trying to be a station wagon more than an SUV.
Well, what was the other thing? Yeah, the something star, the
Freestar. Yeah.
It was the same kind of thing that nobody knew what the heck it was.
Yeah, but it really was a station wagon
with
some SUV to it. Yeah. What's funny is when you look at the Flex that's in here, I think someone uploaded it from a screen capture of the TV commercial because it says that it was uploaded on the 17th of December, and the movie, I believe, opened yesterday. So that star system that I mentioned, you know, X number of stars denoting the car's role in the movie, it's got a shadow star with a question mark next to it.
Shadow star?
Yeah, it's not actually filled in.
Oh, okay.
All right?
I see.
With the gold coloring that they usually put on the stars. So, So there it is. But, I mean, it's interesting what you can look up when it comes to the different cars. I decided to look up Chrysler CM, like the Roadster I have and like the sedan I used to have that Elliot Ness got around in.
Yeah.
And I found a movie that was, it's not worth looking for right now, but it starred someone like Rex the Wonder Dog, and his master drove a 31 Chrysler CM six-cylinder Roadster.
Was that something from the 30s?
Yeah.
A Max
yeah.
the Wonder
I think,
Dog?
Oh, yeah, okay. I think it was a 1935 movie. It was a black and you know what?
You know, you're older than me, and I didn't remember it.
Yeah, not that much. But you know what was really wacky about it? That is the only CM Roadster I've ever seen either in person or in a picture, and I'm talking even pictures going back to the day.
That was in good condition?
No, that didn't have side mount spare tires.
That did not?
Did not. Oh. The spares in the back, where I have a trunk on mine.
Right.
And where my sedan had a spare tire, because there was no trunk on my sedan.
So that must have been the cheaper model.
Yeah, it was the standard version. Most of the ones that have survived and most of the ones that were photographed were the Sport Roadster.
Now, I don't know why anybody would buy a Roadster back then for sure, but it to me, you would have bought
it
because you wanted a sporty car. And dual side mounts makes the car look even sportier, so I would think most people would want that.
You know, it looks good without the side mount tires.
Really?
It looks longer.
Oh,
it does.
It would, yeah.
Yeah.
I
can understand why people bought two spare tires in those days. The tires weren't that good, so it kind of made sense.
Well, wait a minute. Andy had a 26 or 25 Rolls-Royce, 20 horsepower, and it had three spare tires.
One in each fender and one in the back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Was that the Wayman?
Yeah,
the Wayman bodied one. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I talk about, somebody who is really paranoid.
Yeah, but now talking about Andy, all right. If you go to imcdb.org, you can also look things up by the movie. So if you look up The Great Gatsby, not that disaster that Baz Luhrmann did recently where none of the cars was appropriate, maybe one or two accidentally.
I saw the movie. I had to see the movie, and I'm going oh God.
Yeah, so Gatsby's car was a reproduction of a Duesenberg SJ. They didn't call them SJs in the day. There was a Model J with the supercharger.
Okay.
Subsequently, it's kind of like the watch I'm wearing wasn't an analog watch when they started making them like that. It was a watch.
Right.
Okay. But the SJs, as we all call them now, were all built in, I think, 31 or 32. Now, Gatsby was in the ground for, 10 years by then, if you go by the book?
Well, 25.
Well, the book was written in 25, but I think set in 22.
It was
because Nick was thinking back to when he was just a little bit younger, helped him crystallize his thought and his plans for his life.
So in 25, he was flashbacking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you have a license plate that Paramount had created for the movie.
Yep.
They put on your 26 Chrysler.
What a great job.
Yeah. Too. What year did it say on the plate?
Was 25.
25?
Yep.
Didn't say 28. Okay. All right. You could call it 25 and get away with the way it looked. And that's what Paramount was trying to do when they did the movie in 1974. They moved it up a little bit to the mid-20s instead of the early 20s. It was still the jazz age. It was still before Prohibition. It was still when there was a lot of money getting around.
Still before,
a lot of bootlegging.
Before,
a lot of bootlegging.
What do you call it? A depression.
Yeah. So... you could call it that and you would be accurate, and they had a little bit more of a choice of cars because there were fewer cars of the early 20s collected because it frankly started looking better a few years later and more people hung on to the prettier ones.
I'm going to say from maybe 16-17 to about 23 or 4 cars
there weren't that many good looking ones.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're people who like the look of the old cars quite a bit. Yeah, they weren't the most attractive ones. So it gave them a little bit more leeway.
Like the early 50s.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, if you go and look at that, you will see in comments from me, because John drove his 26 Chrysler in the movie. I don't think it shows because...
It does not. I drove it in the making of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. But I actually was the caretaker for the cars for a few weeks. And so I put in a few comments about some of the cars that are there. If you see R.I. Old Car Guy, that's me. So, and you will see our friend Andy sitting in his Rolls-Royce limo that he owned, and he was the chauffeur in it because he was smart enough to realize that if anybody else drives this thing, they might ruin it.
Yeah, and from what I understand, he only slowed that down wherever the car ended up. It's not.
Yeah, the car did not get well taken care of. How someone... To fill you in, Andy's car was a 1922 American-built Rolls-Royce that in the 1970s only had 20,000 or so miles on it. It was in spectacular condition. The original owner of the car was Augustus Bush, and if I could have the sound effect of a beer can opening right now, I'd do it, but we don't have, I just thought of this, and it couldn't, I couldn't ask Brett to look for it.
But he's quick.
Yeah.
All right.
And anyway.
This one's for you.
Yeah, I suppose so. That Augustus Bush. So the car was beautiful. All you got to do is look up the movie or go on to IMCDB and take a look, and you'll see how gorgeous the car was. Andy didn't give it away when he got his next car by any stretch.
Oh, he never gave a car away.
Yeah.
Andy used to buy cars that he was going to keep for life. And somebody had come along and look at it.
And throw so much money at him,
and
he gave it up.
You want to sell that car? And he goes, no. He goes, how about for this? Well, basically, it's I'll give you this for it. And he goes, sold.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, and then, from what we found out, who was it we were talking with? Someone, I guess, involved in having that Gatsby event at Hearthside, which is the house where the Mowbrays, Andy Mowbray used to live.
Was it
Kathy Hartley?
Yeah, the director.
That's right. And she actually did some research and found out that the car had somehow or other, I was going to say had gone back to England, which isn't accurate because the car was built in Massachusetts.
Right.
Had gone to England and fallen apart. So how someone can not take care of something like that is way, way, way beyond me.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Anyway, the time's 8:34. You're listening to Drive Through Radio on AM 790. If you're wondering about cars in the modern era, when we come back, John's going to be hopping behind the wheel of a Mitsubishi.
Yes, they still make them.
They make them as Drive Through Radio continues here on AM 790. And this time around, we hop behind a car that, yes, actually does exist. It's a Mitsubishi. Now, it's not just a Mitsubishi. It is specifically the 2015 Mitsubishi Outlander Sport, the 2.4 GT model with all-wheel drive. It's a four-door SUV. How many rows of seats it got?
It got two.
Okay, so it's a five-seater?
It is.
Okay.
It is. Yeah, and the 2.4 liter, which is the optional engine that they make for this vehicle, but I believe it's standard with the GT trim. All right, it's 168 horsepower and 162 foot-pounds of torque. They just couldn't even them up. Bring one up a little and bring one down, so you just say 168. Or 166, or something like that. But I always thought that would have been a neat thing to do, but they didn't do it.
Now, one thing that's confusing, John, is the fact that Mitsubishi has two SUVs. One of them is called the Outlander. The other is called the Outlander Sport.
Yeah, we only drove the Sport this time.
Yeah, the Outlander's a little bit bigger and a little more money.
Yeah, and this has, I'm going to say, decent looks. There's nothing outlandish or over the top or dull about the looks. So I'm thinking that it will not go out of style quickly.
Yep.
All right? Mm-hmm. So that's always the thing that you take a chance at with these over fancy style vehicles.
They look great now, but next month.
and speaking about looks and style, of course, it has the CD post problem that, of course, you would complain about is it kills your rearward rearward vision to the right rear.
Yep.
And so,
and while it's nice that you can get a camera.
Yeah, yeah. That kind of thing. You know, it has a very small, tiny piece of glass back there, mm-hmm. you know, and that adds to the style. Let's see. The roof had that we have a panoramic roof, and it just, if you look up things about it, it says panoramic roof, and it's glass that does not open, but it does go pretty much the full length of the passenger compartment. It ends just above the heads or just behind the heads of the rear seat passengers, and it has a sunshade that motors in and out as far as you want to cover, you know, to protect from the sun. But an interesting part of this in the track of the shade is a LED lighting setup for ambiance. And it's I'm going to say I didn't look at the light, but what you can see is a ring of light in the perimeter of the sun roof. Sitting inside at driver's seat, looking at in front, you see a tachometer and speedo. The tach's $8,000, and it has a 6,500 RPM red line, and the speedo goes up to 150. Now I can't imagine anybody pushing this to 150 because it's not that big of a vehicle, and it's not. It says sport, but it's not a sports car, so it's a little bit optimistic, I feel. All right, the steering wheel has lots of controls, and you're sitting there on, in this particular vehicle, the optional leather heated leather seating surfaces. And the seat heat has
not easy
two,
to say, is it?
Two speeds as well.
Or, two heat speeds. Speeds, two, yes. two levels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, two-speed heat.
Yeah.
We're talking cars here, you know.
All right.
All right, and in the center stack, you have under the AC vents is the optional touring package 7-inch multifunction nav touchscreen with the annoying lawyer button, which will allow you to
allow
do
you.
Nothing. You cannot do anything.
Yeah.
You can't even look at the map,
mm-hmm.
okay, mm-hmm. without kissing
saying,
a lawyer's butt,
uh-huh.
you know,
yep.
on the nav. You can do other things, but you can't touch the nav.
Okay, that
I hate that.
Yeah, I was going to say I find it annoying.
Yeah,
yeah.
The heating HVAC system has the controls that I favor over practically anything else,
mm-hmm.
and that's the three knob setup: one for the blower, one for the intensity, mm-hmm. or is that the other way around? And
degrees.
One for position. Okay, degrees, speed again.
Fan speed.
Yeah. And of course, where you're going, the mode is, it's, I'm going to say, probably official name. Most car companies that have a word for that direction.
Yeah, mode.
Call
mode.
It mode.
Mm-hmm.
And what it doesn't have, though, is mm-hmm. they get big thumbs down on this one for HVAC system. You can't get recirc on any kind of defrost.
Uh-huh.
So apparently where they make design these vehicles, they don't have stinky buses.
Okay, but they build them in Illinois, where I know they do.
Right.
By the way, just as an aside, you remember when Chrysler started saying imported from Detroit?
Yeah.
Earlier, Mitsubishi said imported from Illinois.
Really?
Yeah, I have a shirt that says
wow.
that. Oh,
wow, they must have copyrighted that one.
Evident. Well, they didn't say imported from Detroit. The other thing is that since those companies worked hand in glove for so many years, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows? But anyway.
Right. You don't use it. This is not usually seen, what I'm going to tell you about.
Yeah.
This is on vehicles, especially not lately. And that's HID headlights with a manual adjustment wheel. So I can sit there and adjust my HID low beam headlights.
You mean the height of
height. Up and down.
Well, that's pretty cool. Now, for people who aren't familiar with what you're talking about, a lot of these high-intensity discharge headlights, well, first of all, they are very, very bright. And so they have a top cutoff on the beam so that they're not...
I call that a shade.
Yeah, but its effect is, if you're looking at the beam that it projects, you can see that it's flat at the top, and it's clearly delineated.
About 10 feet from a building, you can really see
this. Yeah, and if it's up too high... it's going to blind oncoming drivers. So if you've got a lot of stuff in the back of the vehicle and it doesn't automatically compensate for it, because that'll bring the, you know, it'll tip the vehicle so that the headlights are up high, then it's good that there's a way of bringing them down.
Yeah, but I'm the
but
reason
you have to know
I don't
to do it.
Yeah, that's the reason why practically everybody has the automatic dipping.
Yeah.
Today. Now, from my understanding, is the HID headlights, the low beam and high beam are the same intensity.
It's the direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and by the way, with a name like high intensity discharge headlights, mm-hmm. it sounds expensive, and the bulbs are.
Yes, they are. but they really do light things up.
And oh, by the way, they melt ice like crazy, too.
Oh, you're cleaning the lenses, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good and hot.
Which is a good thing because plastic lenses are easy to scratch.
Yeah, that's true. And by the way, it has fog lights as well.
Okay.
So, you know, to do in the bad weather kind of thing. All right, in the center console, there's cup holders in this PowerPoint, and then there's a storage compartment that's kind of like between the seats but underneath your elbow, and you open that up, and there's what do you call it, PowerPoint in there and USB connections as well. And the cup holder in the front between these two things surround a stick shift with a manual shift mode, but it also has paddles on the steering wheel so you can play Boy Racer either way.
Well, or actually, you know, we tend to give those systems a little bit of grief, but the fact of the matter is, in the old days you had something similar. It was park, reverse, neutral, drive, second, low. Right. So there were only three speeds in the transmission. Some of them had overdrive, and that was a fourth. But that was X number of positions that you had that you could, quote unquote, manually shift into. But when you start putting 6, 7, 8, 9 speeds in a transmission, and I'm not sure how many this one has, but
1,000.
Oh, it's the continuously variable. Yeah. Then if you're going to give the driver the ability that he or she had back when you could move the Prindle around, you need that.
And it has like predetermined points for when you do it.
Right.
But really, the only time I really ever used any kind of a shifter in an automatic transmission vehicle.
Going down a hill to slow it down.
When I was climbing Pikes Peak.
Descending
Pikes Peak. Mm-hmm. I would shift up and down just using my thumb.
Yep.
And that was to slow the vehicle down. Mm-hmm. Do you realize partway down that mountain, they stop you? Mm-hmm. And check your brake temperature.
Make sure your brakes have a chance to cool off so that they don't fade and just let you go as far as the car wants.
Yeah. So it was very interesting. I never thought
it makes perfect
that
sense.
Somebody would actually do that.
Well, that's because you've also noticed those little runoff, brake failure runoff.
They probably have a real legitimate reason to.
Oh, yeah.
Like somebody went off the deep end.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea at Mount Washington either.
Yeah, no, it would be great. Also, in the console, there's a knob. It's for shift on the fly. Now, the problem with this shift on the fly thing is what it says on it. Well, not
you're talking about getting in and out of all-wheel or four-wheel drive.
Yeah, it says two-wheel drive, and then it says auto four-wheel drive, which is really
all-wheel drive.
All-wheel drive, not auto four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's four-wheel drive lock.
Which is the one that's the shift on the flyable.
Well, no, they're all shift. You can select
among any of the modes.
Yeah. And just because it has, you know what it really needs nowadays for you to have to stop is a low range. And it doesn't have.
Yeah.
It doesn't have.
Low. So, so that's not necessary for you know, it doesn't require you to stop.
Also, have bottles and other things, storage in the doors. And there's a pocket behind just the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. Now, talking about behind the driver's seat, getting into the back seat behind me was a little bit tight.
Yeah, you do tend to put the seat back.
And getting out was even more difficult than getting in.
Huh.
You know, so, but I had enough legroom, though. Mm-hmm. I had enough legroom. It had a 60-40 seat second row that folds almost flat. Mm-hmm. And it had cup holders in the center fold down an armrest. And the center person has a smaller headrest to help you not block the
view back.
Because that, of course, would make it a little bit more difficult. All the way in the way back, besides having a full-size mini spare, there's a subwoofer if you have the optional Rockford Fosgate, sound
audio,
sound system, which, by the way, sounded just great. And it's not, I don't think there's enough room back there unless they wanted to lengthen this vehicle to put a third seat anyway.
No, no, the Outlander is a third seat vehicle, but so it's a bigger vehicle.
So, you know, all in all, it was a pretty nice ride. Now, one of the things that I'm going to say that probably can happen with this is the price didn't look that cheap, but they're probably willing to deal on this because, of course, you never hear them advertised.
No.
So, you know, to get people in and stuff like that. Okay. I'm sure they're ready to talk.
Okay, so the 2015 Outlander Sport 2.4 GT with all-wheel drive. Base list price is missing, but the MSRP is $24,995. And equipped as this one was, $30,495.
Well, I think that price that you gave, the 24-something, is the base price for the Sport GT.
Yeah, it's just the option list game where you usually look for that.
With a big engine.
What does the EPA say?
They don't say a lot. No, they say they say too much is what they say.
Yeah.
They say on a highway, maybe on Route 66, you might get 26 miles to the gallon. And in the city, possibly 23 for a combo of something like 24.
Okay, and your mileage will
definitely vary.
Yours didn't it?
Of course it did.
Yep. Hey, that's going to do it for Drive Through Radio for this week. By the way, when we were talking a little bit earlier about the different vehicles that or the different shows that some of the cars were in, Inside Information from 1934 was the one starring the Wonder Dog, whose master drove a 31 Chrysler like the one I have.
Inside Information.
Inside Information. It was a kid's movie. Anyway, that's going to do
it. Did you see it?
No, I just saw the pictures. Anyway, that's going to do it for Drive Through. It's probably on YouTube. Drive Through Radio for this week. Brett Ferruccio, thanks for getting us through it. John, we'll see you outside. Not didn't mean it the way it sounded. Anyway, make sure you check your mirrors and signal your turns, and we'll see you in a week. Adios.